netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
G'day, and thanks for listening to this week's FX Guide Podcast. I'm Mike Seymour. So this week, John Montgomery, in our 17th podcast, will be talking to Isaac Guinard, Senior Product Manager from Ion Software, which, of course, for most of you, that means Fusion. Fusion's great software, a really good compositing package that bridges the divide between TVC and feature film work. One of the first packages to have OpenEXR support, and in the latest release, it's done a couple of really interesting things. Not only has it been re-engineered under the hood, and John will get into that in a minute, but also they've added a lot of support for 3D compositing and an interactive support for working in a 3D compositing environment. We're pretty excited about it. So over to you, John.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Thank you, Isaac, for joining us. Before we start talking about the new release of Fusion, why don't you give us a little bit about a little bit of background about yourself and Ion?
Sure, thanks. I guess we first created Fusion in 1988 as an in-house tool for our film company. We were using a DOS version of Fusion on films that we were working on in-house, and other facilities were fairly impressed with the software and ended up buying it from us. And it wasn't long before we found we were selling as much software as we were doing actual production work. So we decided to take a chance with it, and we moved the company to North America to form Ion, which is when I joined the company. Now, Fusion was still a DOS application at this point, but we got our hands on an early beta version of Windows NT, so we rebuilt Fusion to be the first application that really took advantage of multi-threading, in my opinion. And that's really been the theme of the company from the beginning, is to create a really powerful application that ran well on affordable commodity hardware. Remember, this is an era where the simplest computer systems for processing film would cost you well above $500,000, and they had to run on big SGI iron.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where Ion sort of comes from.
You're definitely and certainly initially targeted that film pipeline, but your market's kind of grown a little bit in the last couple years, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Fusion was initially designed for film, but we always had in mind that film wasn't, you know, it was only the top 10% of the production pipeline. You know, for every job that's done in film, there's another 10 that are done in video. And so it was important that we address those. And one of the places, you know, that Fusion really stood out at the beginning for video was the fact that we processed fields properly. And I can remember having to convince clients that it was okay to work with fields in Fusion, that they didn't have to deinterlace and then reinterlace their footage just to get an effect shot through. Part of that is, you know, we're shipping every copy of the Velocity software, for example, or the Velocity editing package that goes out comes with a copy of DFX Plus. We bundle with Lightwave so that, you know, Lightwave artists who are working on television get the opportunity to work with Fusion as well.
Yeah, so that's, that really opened it up, because I noticed, especially in Fusion 5 when I first saw it, definitely the type of tool set that's in there shows that different type of user that you're attracting to the product, for sure.
Yeah, it's always being torn in two places. You want to do a product that fits best for the designers, and you want a product that fits best for the really technical film compositors. And I think by trying to create tools that are appropriate for both, you end up creating a very, very powerful software as opposed to something that's too specifically tuned at one user.
Well, I first saw the beginnings of version 5, I guess, last year at IBC, and ran into you on the show floor and was really, really interested to see what you were doing with the support of compositing in 3D space. It's kind of a departure from you guys and maybe some other film compositing tools. What have you kind of discovered in the last year in your development process about 3D compositing or 2.5D compositing?
Well, I've always been enthusiastic about the possibilities of 3D compositing, and we had a pretty good idea how complex the project would be. So it was important we downplayed that in public, because I don't want to ever promise more than we're able to deliver. 3D had been something we wanted to do for a long time, and we'd seen other applications implement variations on the idea. But every time I played with the so-called 3D compositor, I discovered it wasn't very 3D at all, or that the 3D and 2D elements were really two different environments that didn't blend at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it was important to me we exceeded those expectations, and the Fusion 5 wasn't just a 2D compositor with rudimentary 3D environments slapped on. I really wanted to make it so that the process of working in 2D or 3D wasn't something you said, oh, I'm going to work in 3D now, or oh, I'm going to work in 2D now, but it was all part of the same thing. So the result of that was Fusion was delayed by well over a year while we made certain we had the foundations of a seamless system that would last us for another 10 years, not just something bolted on to an existing environment.
I think also just it really opens a lot of interesting things, and from a compositing standpoint and compositor artistic standpoint, if you've been using a 2D compositor in the past, it really opens up a different world.
Absolutely. I think it starts a completely different dialogue between the 2D and 3D departments. You know, in the past, a compositor would have to talk to the 3D department about, you know, I want this individual element, or can you just tweak this element here for me? And now you don't have to go back to the 3D department for absolutely everything.
So, well, let's just stick with the 3D aspect, which is probably one of the biggest features, obviously, in the new release of Fusion 5. What type of things do you have in there for someone who doesn't know much about the software? What have you been able to support in the 3D environment?
Well, obviously, we needed cameras and image planes in our 3D environment. That's sort of the basics of any 3D compositor right there. But Fusion also had a pseudo 3D text tool already, as well as a 3D particle system. So we felt it was important that we incorporate these into the environment. So you're talking about a full 3D text tool with extrusions and beveling that can be manipulated and moved through a 3D environment and integrated with 3D particles, which operate in the same environment and interact with your image planes and with your cameras. So that was a really important part of the whole process, was creating this full-fleshed 3D environment. And of course, once you've got 3D text and 3D particles, you've already got geometry, don't you? So we implemented some basic primitive shapes and then even objects. So, I mean, in Fusion right now, it would be perfectly reasonable to import an FBX mesh of a human figure, light it using two lights, and have him cast a shadow across basic geometry, which roughs out your scene. So you can do shadow passes and other basic geometry type work right from within Fusion. It was also important. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I was also going to say, but in addition to primitive models and so forth, you also have support for FBX and things like that, so that you can get basically about any geometry you want in there as well, right?
That's right. And, you know, incredibly large models can be imported via FBX. I worked recently on a scene that had 350,000 polygons in it, which, you know, is almost absurd when you think of it in a compositing program. And what we use that for is the FBX format is an excellent way to move back and forth between the 3D and the 2D environment. Because an FBX isn't just geometry, it's also cameras, lights, null positions. So you can use an FBX to bring in the entire scene, the entire project, so that you're working hand in hand with the 3D department.
And you also have support for multiple types of camera data input as well, right?
Yes, well, again, that's an important part of Fusion. The base philosophy for us is we play well with others. And the reason for that, of course, is that we're not tied to any large conglomerate or, you know, there's only one product at Ion, which is Fusion. So it's important for us that our software not just support one file format, but all of them that are in use now. So you can import cameras, and now with the 501 coming up, the null position data and lights from other applications, such as Maya, Lightwave, Softimage, XSI, and there's a fourth one there, but I can't remember off the top of my head. Oh, and of course, FBX.
So you've got the compositing environment, you've got lights, the particles in 3D, which are just fantastic. What type of things did you run into in dealing with kind of rendering quality and image quality with rendering versus the 2D pipeline?
Oh, there's no question. Rendering in 3D and rendering in 2D aren't even related to each other. It was shocking, the differences. Certainly, speed was a major issue. And, of course, as a compositor, I'm used to virtually instant feedback from my environment. And we found one of the things that really slowed us down was coming up with a 3D renderer of our very own that was capable of the kind of performance I expected from my interactive work environment. That was a big job there. We also found, of course, that, you know, OpenGL gets a lot of hype as an environment to really accelerate the performance of the application, but it also gives you a lot of constraints on how you can operate, and learning those constraints and how to work around them was a big job with Fusion 5. In the end, we implemented both an OpenGL renderer and a software renderer, and of course, the important part of the software renderer is that, you know, you can network render everything in your 3D environment, but the OpenGL renderer is fantastic for fast interactive feedback.
Again, I think the true 3D support in your product is just fantastic. But there's a lot more, actually, to Fusion 5 than that. And probably another big feature where you made some pretty big changes in was kind of like color correction tools and grading tools that have been pretty dramatically enhanced in this version.
Yeah, a lot of those tools were things that we had been sitting on for a while, things that we knew needed to change, but needed some of the base functions that we'd changed in Fusion 5 to stand out. One of those is definitely the ability to analyze your image using different methods, such as a histogram or a waveform. So Fusion now allows you to bring in waveforms or vectorscopes right into the view and then see what's actually happening in, from a scientific standpoint with your image. And so it's a way to blend what the desktop video engineer has always done with what the desktop compositor needs to do. In addition to that, of course, we've added additional color tools, things like instancing for color tools. And instancing is one of my favorite changes in Fusion 5.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know how I lived without them before. The idea is really simple. It was originally intended for color correction, where you may want to apply the same correction to 20 shots. The idea was to have 20 color correction tools, but really there's only one tool, not 20. So any change made to any of the tools affects them all, which is really a time saver. But what's even cooler, though, is that you can isolate one or more controls from the instance tool and regain control over it individually. So if a change to, say, the gamma of an image is working for 19 of those shots, but it isn't quite right for one of them, you can take over the gamma control and change it independently of the rest while all the controls stay the same. And so in the end, though this was originally designed for color, it's in everything in Fusion, and I use it all the time now, for specifically for masks. I find instanced masks are in every graphic design shot I ever do.
Yeah, I'm in other applications, I'm continually linking stuff via expressions or motion math or something like that to kind of work around this idea of the instance node, you know, which is just such a really nice, simple implementation of that, actually.
That's right. And sometimes all you want to do is connect the brightness to the brightness on something else or to use an expression. That's a very simple process. But there's a completely other inverted workflow where what you're saying is, I want this tool exactly somewhere else. And so instances were meant to address that. They were sort of a lucky find in Fusion 5. We had always wanted to do something like that, but we were changing something else entirely to do it the way that the flow operated. And we realized that suddenly this went from hard to very easy.
Yeah, well, again, I think that'll be great, and especially, like you say, work really well in the color correction realm. Another area, masks. Actually, the implementation of masks has changed pretty dramatically between the last version of the release and now.
Yeah, and you know, that's really another big request from our artists. That's definitely an artist-driven change. Masks now appear on the flow as tools like any other tool. And let's face it, composition's got a lot more complicated over the past 10 years. Where I used to work on a scene with maybe 5 layers and 50 tools, it's not uncommon now to see compositions with hundreds or even thousands of tools. So putting the masks on the flow makes it a lot more possible to see what the hell's going on with the scene, especially if you aren't the artist who created the scene. So, I mean, that's a really, really obvious first startup. You can see the change in the masks. But we also had a lot of requests for variable softness and polylines, which we also did for Fusion 5. And the thing about that is it required us to basically tear apart our entire mask rendering code and rebuild it. And so when we looked at the way other applications had implemented variable softness, two things really stood out for me. One, the polylines were really fragile. I mean, it was easy to get into a state where you could see rendering errors instead of a nice smooth edge. So if you crossed the lines in just the wrong way, or if you moved 2 points too close to each other in the soft edge, then the whole thing would break. And also, it struck me that the artist seemed to have to do twice as much work when working with a double polyline than when they were working with a single-edged one. I think we managed to solve both of those problems. Our rendering system for double polylines now is phenomenal, and the artist can easily convert from a single polyline to a double and back again as needed. So that reduces the amount of effort that the artist has to put into it. We even made it possible to convert from an animated Bezier polyline to an animated B-spline and then back again, which is something I've never seen.
No, not without the entire shape totally changing position and shape or connection.
Exactly. I mean, you'll see minor changes and variations to the edges of the shape, but 99% of the work you've already done will be preserved. And having gone through the same process as every other effects artist in the industry, I very well remember what rotoscoping was like and pray that I never have to do it again, if you know what I mean. So anything we can do to make the rotoscoping artist's job easier is a very high priority for us.
Yeah, because it's certainly one of those things when you're working interactively with the software, you're working on a shot, you don't always know what you're going to need when you first start rotoscoping an object. So the ability to switch and modify and go back and forth between things is actually really useful.
Well, and the prevalence of pre-visualization makes that even more important, because I'll often start working on a shot long before the shot is even made in a pre-visualization stage. And you can do your first rough renders and rotoscopes and so forth, and then somebody will hand you a shot and there's tons of motion blur in it, and you're like, wait a minute, I have to do this all over again. So I really wanted to avoid that. Well, and so far, feedback from our users has been phenomenal with the masks.
So I imagine those have kind of been the top faves from your users and the software who've gotten their hands on it, or maybe those who've been involved in beta testing. But what are some of the other features that have kind of maybe...
Well, the biggest change, without a shadow of a doubt, is that we've changed from a binary format to an ASCII format for the same composition. That's the kind of thing that, from an artist's perspective, it has no impact on the way that the image looks or the way you change things. But it was absolutely necessary. I mean, every software product is one or two things it did wrong in the first place, where you wish you could go back in time and change your decisions. And the binary file format we used in previous versions was like that for us. So for me, it was important that we changed the format and moved to an ASCII composition, and that it would be really well-structured and easy to work with, so that you wouldn't need a degree in programming to understand how the data was stored and to manipulate it. I think we succeeded with that. However, the flip side, of course, is that by changing to an ASCII format, we broke every API in Fusion. The bad side was that it meant that there was 3 years between releases, and we typically only go away 1 year from release. The good side was that it forced us to touch every part of Fusion and to update every single piece of source code in Fusion to accommodate the new ASCII format. And I think that overall, Fusion's benefited dramatically from that.
So what are people doing with that? Are they running background scripts to get access to images and things like that? Or
That ties in very well with Fusion's already powerful built-in scripting system. So, I mean, to give you a classic example of that is that we have clients who are automatically outputting, directly from Lightwave, they're automatically outputting Fusion compositions, which then automatically gets handed over to their render manager for processing. Or another fantastic example of that is that Fusion now has a comments tab where you can add comments about your composition, and one of our clients has written a scavenging script that will scavenge all of the compositions on the drive store where they keep their shots and find those comments inside the composition files and then add them to a shot tracking database that they have. And it goes even further than that, really. We have clients who have used event scripting in Fusion to replace entire components of the Fusion workflow. So, for example, when they click on Start Render, instead of seeing Fusion Start Render dialog, they see their own Start Render dialog for their in-house render manager. Or when they create a new composition, instead of opening up, a new composition directly, a dialog appears that they've written for themselves that says, here's the name of the shows we're currently working on, which shot is this related to, and then notifies a shot tracking database that our artist X has taken over shot Y. So we're really starting to see people take advantage of the ability to peel apart a composition and really look at it. And of course, the other component that's really important about having an ASCII format is that applications like Buju and SynthEyes, all of those can now write directly to native Fusion compositions without any intermediate process.
So now I realize it's just another form of text file and that it's a big buzzword right now, but XML is certainly a catchphrase that's kind of running through the industry right now. I'm curious, did you consider doing an XML format, or did you just end up doing
Absolutely.
A very well-documented format of your own, I guess?
Absolutely. We had considered XML. In fact, an initial implementation of this used XML. What we found, however, was that XML is a very... what's the word I want here? It's a very heavy format. There's a lot of overhead to every parameter or piece of LON that you put in. And if you think about a composite with 200 tools, maybe 25,000 controls with animated polyline masks over, say, 90 frames, you're starting to talk about an enormous file. And what we found with the overhead with XML was that it was increasing the file size by 40 to 50% in a best-case scenario and by over 100% in a worst-case scenario. So you can think of a text file that's over 45 to 100 meg in size.
Right.
And so saving that file becomes a real pain. So when we started looking at trimmer and more elegant solutions, and we found it in our own internal scripting engine in the first place, the table format used by Lua is almost perfect for storing data in a lightweight format. So the result is that you still have a very structured format that's very easy to read and very easy to parse with other scripting languages, but it doesn't have that heavy overhead that's going to make things like autosave impossible.
Yeah, it seems like the tags end up taking up easily way more room than actual data in the file. And just
and I find it really detracts from the readability of the file.
Yeah, I agree. It's just one of those buzzwords, though. And as you mentioned, the key is to have something that's readable, structured, clear, and well-documented. And if it's a text file, you can access it.
Absolutely. And I think that's what we've accomplished here. Certainly in Fusion 4, we had a lot of negative feedback about the level of documentation available for our scripting language. And the result of that was that we hired an individual specifically to document the scripting language over the course of a year. So we've gone from, you know, virtually no documentation at all for our scripting language to a well over 250-page manual.
But the last thing I just want to mention, and unless you have other highlights you want to mention, is you, just because it's becoming prevalent in the industry, is the kind of enhanced support for OpenEXR that you've included. It's not just the color data or the format, but you're going to be able to start taking advantage of the different channels.
That's right. That's something I'm really happy about. OpenEXR, I should say, is seeing much wider use in the industry, and it's good to see that format succeed. I don't think that other file formats that were available were really solving the problems of compositing. It was more like we were working around the file formats. OpenEXR seems to really open up the vista there. Fusion was literally the first application with support for OpenEXR. We released a plugin for Fusion 4 the same day that ILM announced it. Of course, subsequent to that, ILM and the open source community made modifications to expand OpenEXR support. So Fusion 5 now supports the latest version of OpenEXR, which means you can access any channel of data stored within the file, not just the standard RGB, A, and Z. That's something that I'm really starting to see a lot more facilities moving to OpenEXR, and the way they're using it isn't, I think, the way that anyone had originally intended. So you'll see an OpenEXR file without red, green, or blue data at all, but which contains both specular RGB and diffuse RGB and then highlight passes and backlight passes. It's really quite fascinating.
I think that really opens up a lot of possibilities in workflow management within the facility. It's just so much clearer to enclose all that information, all that image data in one file.
Yes, and I think we're going to find that Fusion continues to expand that work area. There's certainly many features that I have in mind to work with OpenEXR files that will be seen over the next 6 months.
Not to necessarily denigrate or cast doubt on other applications out there, but I'm curious, where do you feel Fusion really excels in comparison to applications out there? I mean, just what is really strong about your product that makes it stand out in kind of a crowded field?
Interactive feedback. No question. Fusion excels at getting feedback to the artist about the changes they've made. It's not one thing, it's 1,000 little things, from the way RAM caching works, to network clustering, to auto proxy, to almost perfect multi-threading. And all of that's designed to optimize the interactive performance for the artist. That makes working with the images feel like doing art instead of programming. To me, that's what stands out most about Fusion.
Yeah, and then now just, again, an incredible leap in tool depth also in this version. For people who didn't have the pleasure to view one of your demos on the show floor at IBC, or maybe, I got to say, you do an outstanding job of introducing people to the product.
Thank you.
People come away from your overviews and demos and the pods very impressed. But if someone wants to try out Fusion 5, how do they go about doing this? You guys going to have some kind of demo copy or learning copy?
I've certainly planned for a learning edition of Fusion for the new year, so something that we'll really focus on in January, February. And in the shorter term, if someone's truly interested, they can contact any of our sales department and request an evaluation copy, and we'll send out a time-limited license that will allow you to work with the software as a fully functional product. In addition to the learning version in the new year, we're going to be releasing over 5 hours of courseware to sort of really train you on how to use Fusion and to help people who've used other applications really get a kickstart on understanding how Fusion approaches compositing.
Well, thanks, Isaac. I want to mention before I close out that we've got some links to some really nice QuickTime movies that you did with overviews of the new features and stuff in Fusion 5 that people can download and take a look at in the meantime. But again, nice job on the software, and we'll look forward to seeing more developments from you in the future.
Sure. Thanks.
Well, thanks so much for that, John. As you guys know, we are an original site. We don't go in for blogging and stuff. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but we just choose to try and bring you new and original stories and research things at a fairly deep and geeky level. We've got some great stories coming up in future weeks. There's some really interesting... we're doing a series of stories on people doing non-traditional live-action kind of work, stop-frame animation, traditional hand-drawn animation, so keep an eye out for that, as well as some really in-depth stuff coming up on Toxic. John's been doing a lot of work with Toxic, including doing work with it in Japan, so John will be tackling that in weeks to come. If you'd like to send us some feedback, we'd really welcome it, and always try and respond to everybody and let them let you know that we've received it. We really thrive on getting that feedback and hearing what you guys want to listen to and talk about, and it really does affect what we do each week. So please click on the link on the webpage and give us an email. Okay, thanks very much, and we'll catch you next time around.
This podcast is copyright 2005 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide LLC.